The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. The budget was on Wednesday and initially Rishi Sunak received a positive reception from Tory MPs and a relatively positive reception from the media, that there was some criticism of the tax hikes. However, is the real political pain now coming through? In documents published after the budget, it became clear that the pay rise that is going to be offered to NHS staff comes to 1%. Keir Starmer has called for NHS heroes to get a bigger pay rise, and the unions have been quick to go in their attack. James, this has the potential to be quite a difficult political row for the government, doesn't it?
Yes, nurses have clearly worked remarkably hard in the last year because of the pandemic. And the idea of them getting a kind of 1% pay rise doesn't sound very generous. Now, it's worth noting that most nurses will get more than 1% because of kind of progression payments that carry on at the same time. But it is obviously a political open goal that Labour are desperately trying to fire the ball towards. I personally think public attitudes to this question will depend very much on what happens to private sector employment. The rationale for the check on public sector pay was essentially that it wouldn't be fair to have big public sector pay increases at a time when you've got mass employment out in the country, as lots of people in the private sector lose their jobs. The OBR forecast for unemployment now is now down to, I think, just below 7%, which is down from the expectation that it would be around 12%. I think if that figure continues to fall, it becomes more difficult politically to argue that public sector pay constraint is justified because people are keeping their jobs, unlike in the private sector.
Fraser, do you think we could see movement from the government on this? We've had a morning round from Nadine Dorris, the health minister, which some have read as at least an opening of the door to a potential movement in the future.
I'd be surprised if that were to happen, because the credibility of a chancellor is at stake. Rishi Sunak will have known exactly what he was doing when he authorised that 1% pay increase. He will also have known that the last chancellor to buckle under pressure when people didn't like his budget was Philip Hammond. And Hammond's credibility was absolutely destroyed after that. So if you get into a situation where the chancellor has a budget, announces various things, people don't like something, he then caves, that makes him a pretty weak chancellor. And I would be really surprised if either he would agree to do this, or if Number 10 would force him to do this, because it opens the door to all sorts of other reversals. I mean, Rishi Sunak is going to spend basically the rest of his time as Chancellor making really, really difficult decisions. So far, he's been writing massive cheques. And by the way, most of what he did in the budget this week was a massive giveaway as well. The opinion poll lead was huge. Tories are 13 points ahead. But what do you expect if you're saying that people can stay on furlough until September? There's going to be tax cuts with nothing to pay for a few years. So he knows this will be followed by difficult decisions that people are going to get annoyed about. And if he crumbles, if they get annoyed enough, that suggests he's going to spend the rest of his time in Number 11 being battered by public opinion and by political reaction. I assume he doesn't want that to happen.
James, what do you think the public reception to this would be? Because as Fraser touched on, the polling since the budget, instant polling, also the YouGov poll yesterday showing a 13-point lead for the Tories, it had voters say that actually they thought this was the fairest budget for over a decade. So do you think that there is a sense that's landed with the British public that actually everyone is going to have to tighten their belts and therefore things like a large pay rise, however well-deserved, is just not possible right now? Or do you think an emotive topic like nurses is a kind of area where this will err a bit?
I think undoubtedly nurses are about the most difficult group for the government to have an argument with now. You know, we hear the Royal College of Nursing is already setting up a strike fund. That would be politically very tricky because they have a huge amount of public sympathy and thanks after the last year. But as I said, I think everything does depend on what the employment situation is. If come the autumn we're in a situation where people's attitude is, you know, people should just be glad to still have a job because lots of people have lost theirs, then I think people's attitude, public sector pay will be very different than if unemployment turns out to be much smaller come the autumn than we expect.
Now, elsewhere, Fraser, one of the stories this week has been on Northern Ireland and the UK taking action when it comes to checks there, moving unilaterally to extend grace periods for Irish Sea border checks. This comes as David Frost has stepped into his new role as a member of the cabinet in charge of this. The EU is saying that this move is a breach of international law, and there's talk that the Brexit deal may now not be ratified. How much this is fighting talk, and how serious is the situation?
Well, I think the Brexit situation is more important than a lot of Brexiteers think. The disruption we've seen since the deal has been significantly worse than many people expected. But I don't quite see the deal collapsing. I mean, nobody's got an incentive to go back into that strange negotiation zone. There's a lot of work that needs done to improve and to tidy up the deal that we've done already. We've seen lots, for example, the Northern Ireland Agreement is looking so bad as to be unworkable. So that would certainly need to be renegotiated. But then again, you've got that up for election in a few years' time. And I also suspect it will be so unworkable that both the EU and the UK will have a shared incentive to improve it before 4 years, 5 years comes up. Because after all, neither side would have an incentive in troubles re-emerging and with the kind of the Good Friday Agreement or the spirit of it being violated by the idea of tension now between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. So yeah, I do see potential for improvement in the Brexit deal negotiated, but I don't think that it's going to collapse or anything like that.
James, do you think some of the, I suppose, the stepping up in terms of the UK approach this week, in terms of the dramatics, is because David Frost is now in charge rather than Michael Gove?
So I think two things. First of all, I think if the government was doing what it did on the Northern Ireland Protocol to kind of get domestic attention for picking a fight with Brussels, they frankly would not have done it on Budget Day and on the day that Nicola Sturgeon was testifying at Holyrood. So I don't buy the argument that this is a fight being picked for public consumption. The timing is too off. I mean, there is an issue that the EU, nearly every single EU diplomat that I've spoken to, interpreted the appointment of David Frost as almost a kind of hostile act in and of itself. They viewed Michael Gove as easier to do business with than David Frost, and they are inclined to interpret kind of every action that Frost takes as aggressive. I think the problem with the Northern Ireland Protocol is this. Both sides have got a point, but they need to kind of step back and think logically. The EU have got a point that these checks are in the agreement that the UK government signed. The UK government have got a point that the current situation is unsustainable because the protocol is rapidly losing the consent of unionists. You're in a situation where the Northern Ireland Agriculture Department's Perm Sec is telling Stormont that Northern Ireland is carrying out more checks than any EU member state. And these checks on goods entering Northern Ireland now amount to 20% of all these kind of checks being carried out across the EU. So you clearly need a more pragmatic approach to the implementation of the protocol to maintain it. The problem is that the EU are saying, no, you've got to abide by your legal commitments. The UK are saying, well, hang on a second, you're missing the point here. And the two sides are as so often in this process, talking past each other. I mean, the argument against the UK's actions this week is the kind of key to, I think, to persuading the EU to move is Dublin. And Dublin, you know, as you can see in the Coveney statement, was clearly irritated by the UK actions. From my understanding of the Irish position is one of the reasons they were irritated was that they thought these extensions were going to end up being granted anyway. So why has the UK acted as it did? I think it is in part acting as it did because it is becoming particularly worried about the situation in Northern Ireland and essentially takes the view, which I think is right, which is if you get to a situation where the protocol is kind of actively interfering in people's lives on a day-to-day basis in Northern Ireland, it is going to become politically unsustainable.
Finally, Fraser, we've been told summer holidays are in the air. even domestic summer holidays at one point. But there's good news today for those who are looking for a break abroad. However, perhaps best news if you're in your 90s, which is Cyprus to welcome vaccinated UK tourists for May. The Cyprus government have said they will open its borders to vaccinated Brits from the start of May. So long as they can show that they've had both COVID jabs, they will be able to travel there without restrictions. In terms of timing, not that many individuals are going to have had their two jabs by that point, really, all by midsummer, no?
Yes, that's right. And there's been a bit of misreporting about this scheme in the UK press today. I used to live in Cyprus when I was a teenager, and so I do follow events there quite closely. And it started off because Israel's got its vaccinated green pass going up, and there's quite a lot of Israel-Cyprus traffic. They're quite close to each other. I used to travel to Tel Aviv when I lived in Episcopi when I was younger. And it worked. So they figured, well, if this works with the Israelis, can it work for the Brits? But what they've said to the Brits is not that you need a passport to come here. It's that you can come here if you've got a PCR test. You can get them for 50 quid in an airport. You can get a lamp test, which is a lot cheaper than a PCR test. We can go to Cyprus from April, as long as we can prove that we've had a negative test. All they're saying is that in common with the Israeli scheme, they're prepared to drop the requirement to get a test if you can prove that you've had the vaccine. And as you say, only two doses of that vaccine. But there is another interesting part of this, which is politically difficult for the British government. Israel's Green Pass, which is now underway, is issued to people who've been vaccinated or who've recovered from coronavirus. So if you've had the virus and you've got better, they're assuming you've got the antibodies and you can move about. Now, the UK government is very suspicious about this. It doesn't want to acknowledge the notion of recovery immunity. I'm not quite sure why, but right now, for example, Greece has already said it will take Israelis with a green pass, and by the way, it will take Brits too. And the UK government said, okay, great, that means if you get vaccinated, we can give you a green pass and you can go to Greece. But Greece has also said it will take Brits who've recovered from coronavirus. So how can a Brit prove that they've recovered? There's no enthusiasm in the government to recognise recovery immunity or to incorporate it as part of the vaccine ID cards that Michael Gove is considering right now. Now, so far, the Cypriots haven't said that they will accept recovery immunity as they do for Israelis. But it does show you how difficult this is going to get for the UK government. There's not that many countries taking vaccine passports, and those who are not, as the papers say today, thinking you need a vaccine to come to our country. They're saying you need a vaccine or you need a negative test. And negative tests are very easy and very cheap to acquire. So I don't think it's that much of a game changer when it comes to the politics of the vaccine. If anything, it might throw up a difficult question for the government in the form of recovery immunity.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.